All right, on this episode of Bouts Talking Bouts, excited to be talking to an individual with a very intriguing fight set for BKFC 47, which goes down on July the 14th. We've got that interim light heavyweight championship on the line as Josh Dyer knuckles up and toes the line against Jared Warren, and great getting to have Jared on the show today. How's everything going there, man?
Everything's good, man. I'm just kind of been in a extended fight camp just due to how this year has been. You know, I had several fights that were supposed to happen earlier in the year, and they kept falling apart for one reason or another. So I'm definitely conditioned and ready to go. Just, chiseling away these last couple weeks, and we can finally get back in there and get after it.
Yeah, I was going to kind of talk about that, because I could understand why that would, you know, be frustrating. It having been a little bit since you last fought, but I was seeing an article before your last fight saying you were, you know, calling for a title shot if you got your ideal outcome in the last one, and with this interim title being on the line, did things almost pan out in an ideal sort of sense? Like, I imagine it was frustrating not getting to fight sooner, but did things kind of pan out in an ideal sort of way there?
Yeah, I mean, I am happy that it is for a title, you know, even though unfortunately it's the interim, it should be either for a vacant or, you know, fighting against Lorenzo if he would defend it. After my last fight in November, I was told that I was going to fight the winner of Lorenzo and Richmond, which was cool. I was happy with both those matchups. Fight panned out like it did, and regardless of who won or lost, you know, Richmond dropped down to 175, and then Lorenzo started his thing talking about wanting to go to heavyweight. So it's kind of made it a pain. So that didn't pan out like originally thought it would. So this is kind of the next best thing. I did ask for this fight against Josh Dyer. He's the only one that's, you know, truly beat me before. And it's been a few years in the making, and I've just come a long way since then. I figure there's no better way to test yourself than, you know, an apples-to-apples situation where you can rematch with somebody that you fought prior to making a lot of training-type changes. So, yeah, man, all in all, you know, even if there wasn't a title involved, I would still want to fight him for the rematch type purposes. So I'm happy with how things are.
Yeah, I would just think that there'd be a certain feeling attached to it, just with you kind of being close to a moment like this, even around the Isaac Doolittle fight, just talks of, you know, title eliminator and things like that. Like, how satisfying is it to, I guess, have like learned from that and kind of rebuild, and now you've earned this spot in the division again?
Yeah, it took a little bit of grinding. You know, that the Doolittle situation is it's annoying because, you know, honestly, like, I'm pretty good at admitting whenever I've lost or, you know, something along those lines. I really don't feel like I lost that fight. Like, you know, I went the distance. I feel like he kind of got the hometown nod. I don't think it would have been the same outcome had it been in, you know, even a neutral location. But it is what it is. But, you know, it doesn't upset me because I, you know, deep inside, I don't feel like the guy beat me. Like I said, with Dyer, you know, he did beat me fair and square. But, yeah, post the Doolittle fight, you know, I figured I had to get myself right back in the mix. So, you know, back then, Jomie Escobosa was the first person they offered me. I jumped at the opportunity immediately, you know, with him being 6-0, coming over from, you know, being a champ from a different organization. It was a perfect opportunity because I knew beating him would put me right back in the mix. And fortunately, it did. And then, really, when I fought my last fight against Jay Jackson, that was just kind of a, I don't mean this like disrespect, but it was kind of a busy fight. You know, it didn't have much of a narrative to it. It wouldn't have really changed things too much one way or the other. It was just kind of like, hey, you can either, you know, fight him or you can keep waiting until, you know, the title fight opportunity starts coming. And I was glad I was able to get one more in before the year was out last year. So, yeah, man, it's been a process, but it's been a good process. Every on a little winning streak now, and feels good.
Yeah, and I mean, just kind of briefly touching on that last one, I know you were saying it was almost like a stay busy fight more so, but I mean, getting the second round KO as you kind of, you know, mapped out and things like that, and seems like you put on an entertaining co-main event as is per the usual when you get out there and perform. Like, what were the, I guess, main takeaways from that one? Kind of just everything aligned with the preconceived notions and everything?
Yeah, the little bit of a narrative that that fight did have to it was that he had fought somebody else from my same fight gym who was a little less experienced than myself. But, you know, Jay beat him fair and square, you know, earlier that year, Terry Janowski. So I was kind of like, when they offered to me, I was like, oh, this is cool. You know, I can try and get one back for the gym. And, yeah, it kind of went as planned, you know. Fortunately, my fight with Jay was the least damage I've taken in a fight. I actually came away with not only no stitches, but no marks of any kind for the first time. And that's only because, you know, we watched tape on him, and, you know, his last fight he had was against our guy. And it's kind of like, you know, the reverse of that whole, they say, insanity, doing the same thing over and over again without having a different outcome. If he did the same thing over and over again and had a good outcome last time, why would he not do it again? So, looking at it that way, he fought me, or attempted to fight me, the exact same way that he'd fought my teammate, and it kind of just made it, I don't want to say an easy win, but just kind of a simple win. You know, he was a little bit easier to pick apart what he was doing, and just made it quick and smooth for me.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned that, because it does seem like there's a very, you know, strong communal kind of element there. I mean, like, Jihad Wingfield seems like he helms a great team, but so many top-level BKFC fighters within there. But it seems like it goes beyond the technique and the iron sharpens iron work. Like, it seems like a real familial sort of vibe with that whole collective. Can you talk about that connection you have with everyone there and all that?
Yeah, you're right. It is very, very family-like over there. You know, it's great. Everybody gets along in the gym. We train together. We, you know, always go out and celebrate together afterwards. And it's awesome, man. Like, the whole, you know, iron sharpening iron thing is pretty realistic. You know, you got a lot of good talent in there, and we're just constantly, you know, pushing each other to get better. And Jihad's great because, you know, he wants the best for us, and he won't let you, you know, slack on something to not hurt your feeling. You know what I mean? If he's watching you just warm up shadow boxing and you half-ass it, he's going to be like, man, you need to get some better recoil on that. You know what I mean? He's always trying to correct our technique and make us better fighters. So it's been awesome, man. I really do think we have the strongest bare-knuckle team out there. You know, you'll see guys that are, like, manage a lot of fighters, and they might have a collective good fighters throughout their management, but that's spread over a ton of different, you know, not only gyms, but different states, and sometimes out of different countries. We're all in the same little hole-in-the-wall gym, you know, with a bunch of top-notch guys, so it's a cool thing to be a part of. I'm glad that they invited me in when they did a couple years ago, because I definitely wouldn't have gotten as far as I've gotten so far without their helping tutelage.
Yeah, and even though combat sports is an individual effort competitively, I would feel like there's a certain something to, you know, be competing on a card with some of the compatriots from the gym, just with, like, Dave Mundell and Brendan Allen kind of readying for their respective fights. Is there that sort of, like, collective kind of sentiment, like, heading in to do your individual tasks on the same card and all that?
Yeah, I think we're all pretty excited about it, that we get to fight on the same card. The only problem is, like, for me and Dave Mundell have it the worst, because we're the last two. So, you know, while you would like to be sitting and enjoying watching your guys go out there and compete, you got to kind of stay in your little zone and stay warming up and stuff. So you can't really watch it. And to the full extent that the crowd might get to. But that being said, we all are happy to be there, be in the same corner, you know, have the same guys corner us and take care of us. And it's pretty cool. We've joked about it for a while. We're like, man, there needs to be a fight card where it's like Shift MMA versus the world. And that's kind of, this is probably the closest we're going to get to it, you know, we have like four core people that have been there for a while. So that's myself, Mundell, Brandon, and a girl, Crystal. She's fighting on it. And then we got a couple of guys who recently came over from other gyms, that being Jafar Fort. He recently started training with us, so he's on there. Roel Reber, like, there's people are asking if he's part of our crew. He's not. You know, they've gone over, some of the guys have gone over and trained with at his gym before to see, like, I think some sparring and stuff. But we are boys with him. He's a cool guy. We fought on the same card several times. So just a lot of good, familiar faces on there. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's cool you mentioned Crystal Pittman, because she's someone like you who's had very entertaining fights in BKFC, and it must be so huge just for, like, the personal life and everything in a mutual kind of way, just kind of understanding, like, the day-to-day effort that goes into this and just the lifestyle and everything like that. So how much of a benefit is that? Because I imagine just the fact that both of you are endeavoring on this BKFC path together, I would feel like there's a lot of, like, mutual understanding and support there in the personal life, and also maybe bleeds over into the professional end of it.
Yeah, it is definitely a benefit, you know, to be able to understand what one another is going through. I'm in a situation with the weight class that I fight that I don't really have to cut any pounds on the caloric side. I just sweat out a few right before weigh-ins, and I'm good to go. But I, back in the past when I did MMA, I did cut more weight on the dieting side, and it wasn't fun. I was never in a good mood. But you know, right now she has to diet, cut a few pounds, and at least know what she's going through. So even though I do tease her and stuff, I know not to push it too far so I get stabbed. But we do all our training together. You know, we usually do at least two sessions a day. You know, one at a regular gym, one at our fight gym, and so yeah, rest, recovery, rehab. You know, she does a lot. You know, as far as, you know, cooking for us and keeping us healthy and stuff. And she does a lot on the media side too, as far as helping with sponsorships and getting all that stuff done for us and a few members on the team. So all in all, I'd say it's definitely a benefit. And like I said, someone else to understand what you're going through when you're fight prepping.
Yeah, and you were talking about the, I guess, weight cut differences in MMA versus what you do in bare knuckle. Did you learn something from your MMA endeavors where it's like, oh, okay, I'm maybe getting a bit more depleted with some of these cuts, I need to navigate a different division, or what prompted that change, I guess?
Yeah, so it was kind of a, it was definitely a learning experience. So through all my amateur fights, I never once cut weight. I just, what I would step on the scale with, you know, that's what I fought at. And never really thought much about it. Like, I knew I was fighting bigger guys, but I just never, I don't know, just never clicked in my head, like, hey, you know, maybe I should cut some weight and fight guys closer to my own size. So I just kind of rolled with it. Now, when I first turned pro, I was transitioning from being a kickboxer to MMA. And I was just kind of in a weird situation with what I walked around back then. You know, I was in my 20s. I was much skinnier. I was walking around like a buck 62. And, you know, the 155ers are always pretty big guys. I mean, somehow they're always cutting from like the freaking 180s and 190s somehow. So I knew I was, like, at that point, way too small to fight at 155. So I would cut to 145. And even though that's not like a lot of pounds for a typical fighter to cut, I've always been, had that natural lean body type. I don't really have it, you know, any extra fat or anything to lose. I always just kind of walk around with a low body fat. So it was a struggle for me to cut back then. And I definitely didn't enjoy it, especially like being at the fire department at the same time. You know, we work 24-hour shifts and we're usually pretty busy, and like starving yourself at the same time while trying to hold down a regular job, it just wasn't a good place to be in. So fast forward to, you know, 7 years later when I'm doing bare knuckle. When I came in for my first fight, they're like, what do you walk around at? I'm like, 195. They're like, what weight class are you going to fight at? I'm like, 195. I didn't want to literally cut a pound. I didn't want to sweat out a pound. I didn't want to cut one calorie. I was like, I just want to fight at my natural weight class. And even though 195 isn't an official weight class and wasn't back then, you know, the guy they were putting me against was fine, was doing that too. So my first fight, I actually stepped on the scale. You know, I was wearing, let's see, I remember having like my jeans on, pair of shoes, and my watch. All I did was take off my shirt, and I stepped on the scale, and I was like 191 and some change, and I had already had like breakfast and lunch that day. So after that fight, I was like, okay, well, since I'm gonna keep doing this, I gotta pick a weight class. So 185 was the only one that made sense to me. I mean, some people think that I should want to fight in a smaller weight class, but I don't. I think that if you are confident in your technique, your power, there's really no reason to cut so much weight. You know what I mean? Like, I would say it makes a little bit more sense for MMA because you are throwing each other around, you know, grappling, wrestling, and all that. But for this sport, it comes down to really how hard can you hit. You know what I mean? And, you know, on the humble side, I do feel like I was blessed with heavy hands. So I really prefer to just fight at my healthy weight and not have to, like I said, like I used to starve myself. I can just, you know, work out as much and as often as I want to, eat as much and as often as I want to, stay happy, stay healthy. And that way, like, you don't have like a bad, like, mental connection when you're in fight camp. You know, I used to, for MMA, I'd be like, well, yeah, fuck, here we go again. I gotta starve myself and train and not be happy. But now I do enjoy training. And even when I'm in a situation like I was this year when I have an extended time in between fights, I never stop training because I do truly enjoy it. And I just know that there's always stuff to work on and improve on. So it kind of keeps me in a better place mentally.
Yeah, I mean, been demonstrably effective so far just with your opponents having that combined 17-1 record before fighting you across your first group of fights. And, I mean, it has parlayed itself into a great opportunity here just with this being, like we were talking about before, a redemption-minded kind of rematch, but also like a home state title bid here. And just such an intriguing fight because for both yourself and Dyer, it was the second BKFC fight for both of you when you guys initially fought. So I guess it's like a bit of a two-part question. Like, what do you think some of the biggest differences are between yourself but also your opponent as you kind of head into this rematch as compared to the first fight?
There's a lot of differences for me as far as you know, ability that I've gained over the last couple of years, because I, you know, majority of my fights prior to, you know, my little MMA stint were kickboxing. So, you know, I was a really good kickboxer, had a lot of success there and stuff, but I kind of, my first couple fights, I didn't have a regular coach. I didn't have anybody to train me, and I was just kind of going off of the, hey, I know how to fight, you know what I mean? All I got to do is just get in shape, and I can probably excel pretty well. But, you know, I quickly saw that wasn't the case, that there is a big difference between only throwing hands and being a kickboxer. You know what I mean? A lot of different movements, a lot of different stances, footwork, head movement, all that stuff. And so, yeah, after my loss to him is when I got invited over to Shift MMA, and immediately saw, you know, how much there was to learn, how much stuff I didn't know. And so it's been a huge adjustment for me. And I, like, you know what I mean? Like, even if this rematch didn't happen, I do know that I've gotten better over the last couple of years. You know, I wouldn't have made it to where I am if I hadn't started training with them. But again, this is a good true test, getting to rematch with somebody, you know, before and after my training changes. For Dyer, you know, I like to assume that he has learned things over the years too. I mean, as long as he, you know, is still actively interested in fighting, you know, why would he not? But that being said, like, there hasn't been a lot to watch to see if his, because he's, you know, he hasn't been as active as I have since we fought. He's only had a few since then. And, you know, and win or lose, his fights usually go pretty quick. So there wasn't a whole lot of stuff to see if he's made any big adjustments or not. I think for the most part, he is going to be similar to how he was before. But that being said, you know what I mean? Like, haven't got a chance to see a ton. So he's probably improved along the way, which is cool. You know, makes for a more interesting fight from the two of us. So I'm excited about it, man.
Yeah, and I mean, you touched on it there with his, you know, finishing rate being pretty high, just like the style he brings to the ring. And I mean, same could be said for you, just with that 80% finishing rate with three of the four finishes being first round stoppages. But you've also shown that ability to kind of sustain the pace into the final round, and you've done that on more than one occasion there. Like, I'm curious, just with that context of both of you guys being finishers more often than not, like, what do you see as like an outcome for this one? Are you someone who visualizes like a particular outcome for how his fights unfold, or are you just more looking to be like adaptable and kind of in that flow state and be fluid when the fight is going on?
You know, if I was betting money, I would bet that it won't go the distance. Usually the only time fights do, as far as like they do with me, the only time they have gone the distance is two situations. One, if somebody, you know, kind of holds and hugs the whole time, and the other is if someone tries to keep away the whole time. You know what I mean? Like, if someone's only like goal in a fight is to like not get knocked out, like they can make that happen. They can keep their distance. They can run away. They can stay far enough to where they make it through the rounds. They're obviously still not going to win by doing that, but they can make it through the rounds. That being said, that's obviously not his style. I don't see him running for any reason. I don't run away. So you got, you know, two guys that are, you know, on the bigger side of the weight classes that like to go after it. There's very little chance of it going the distance.
Yeah, it's an incredibly intriguing fight, and was definitely excited for this rematch before talking to you. But the insights you're giving are definitely getting me even more excited for this title fight, man. But like I was kind of saying before, I want to be mindful of your time and schedule and everything. So is there any final parting thought you might want to kind of add as we're wrapping up here, Jared?
Nothing in particular, man. I appreciate your time as well. I appreciate you having me on. And, you know, any upcoming fights in the future, feel free to reach back out, and I'd be happy to come on again.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate that. Definitely a mutual thing. Very much enjoyed having you on the show, and definitely excited for this BKFC 47 card, and very much, you know, looking forward to July 14th, seeing how everything goes down with this Dyer rematch. But until then, man, you have a good rest of your day, and thanks again for the time, Jared.
Thanks so much, brother. I hope you have a good day, too, and we'll talk soon.
All right, on this episode of Bouts Talking Bouts, excited to be talking to an individual set for a very intriguing fight at BKFC 47 on July the 14th. It's for the interim light heavyweight championship, and very favorably placed on the card, a co-feature bout, and a very intriguing rematch as well, as Jared Warren knuckles up and toes the line against Josh Dyer. And great having Josh on the show for the first time. How's everything going, man? You having a good solid day?
Hey, yeah, absolutely. It's going great. Finished my project early, so got a chance to take the motorcycles out. We're cruising around Sioux Falls, having a nice, fun time over here. Just had to stop and check out the full river stream. It's looking pretty slick. How's your day going?
Yeah, no, can't complain. Doing well, man. What was the project you finished up, though? What were you getting working on earlier?
Yeah, so I own a painting business, and I was just finishing up one of my sponsors, actually, his houses. So, yeah, we're getting that look all fresh for him, and, yeah, then looking to chill a little bit.
Yeah, for sure, man. That's great to hear. And, I mean, juggling a lot of things, it seems. I mean, I'm kind of curious, though. I mean, like I mentioned from the top, it seems like a, you know, big fight, championship hardware on the line. Like, when did the, I guess, bout offer initially come your way for this one? Like, when did it get on your radar?
Yeah, this one, my manager's been talking to me about it for probably about 4 months now. And we just kind of kept it, you know, as like an opportunity, you know, that might pop up. And then, you know, he gave me the call and was like, yeah, we're good. So I found that out about 7 weeks ago. So I really cranked all the training up and everything. And now we're getting ready to go back to war. You know, Jared's a tough dude. So I want to get in there and, you know, put him down and catch that bell, dude. This is a kind of dream come true opportunity for me.
Yeah, for sure, and a lot to talk about with that fight, but I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't touch on the last one, because it would seem like a good fight to kind of ready yourself for this sort of opportunity, just in the sense of fighting a former light heavyweight title contender last time out, as you're kind of readying for this crack at some gold at 185, and as much as it kind of ended in the first round in a no contest, like, what were some of the takeaways from being in there with someone like Joe Riggs when you guys fought at BKFC 29?
It was really cool. It was a big honor for me. I've been watching for a long time, so whenever I got the opportunity to get in there, it's kind of like your rival, you know, your heroes become your rivals moment. So I'm just like, oh, I gotta, you know, go in there and put him down. My goal is to put him down in the first, and that was one of the reasons why I went in so hard, you know, towards the end. And it sucks that we had the clash of heads, but we were both trying to put each other down, both throwing with everything, and you know, it's one of those things where it just kind of happens. You know, we're two finishers. We get in there and we go to work. So yeah, that unfortunately ended in a way that I wish it hadn't. But no, what I figured out from that fight was that I can hang with the bigger guys. You know, I can connect. My aggression allows me to land punches, and I'm pretty accurate. So it's nice to be able to just get in and let my hands go, and, you know, kind of just do their work.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, very experienced in the BKFC circuit, but I feel like a lot of people too kind of don't really like know as much about some of the experience he had before, even in like Europe and stuff like that. So I mean, probably gleaning a lot from, you know, something like that too. And I mean, I feel like you've obviously experienced a lot in your own bare knuckle journey, having fought for, like, you know, Valor BK early on and stuff like that. It seems like the industry has just grown so much, though. Can you kind of, I guess, speak to that a little bit? Just like, I would think that would be good for yourself as a fighter. Just, it seems like it's a very vibrant kind of industry that really keeps growing and rising. Like, can you talk about the bare knuckle journey so far across, like, a couple promotions there?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I was actually a little intimidated with bare knuckle fighting when it first became a big thing. You know, I didn't really want to be a part of it because, you know, everything I do, you know, uses my hands. So I'm just like, I'm not trying to bust them all up. And, you know, my manager was just like, hey, bud, you want to, should I give him a call and just kind of see what the pay is? And, you know, maybe we should consider it. And I was just like, nah, I don't even really think it's worth it. But I mean, it is what it is. We could at least see the money. You know, they called and he called me back and was, you know, he told me what it was. And I was just like, damn, dude, that's like five times more than I've ever been, you know, offered. So I was just like, who's it against? You know, figured out, oh, it's a UFC veteran. All right, cool. We're going to go ahead and try to whoop his ass. You know, and we accepted the fight. We took it. We finished him in the first, which was the game plan. And then, you know, from there, you know, that fight got us into the bare knuckle scene over at BKFC. And, you know, they told us we were going against a nobody in the beginning. I tried a new manager, and he kind of screwed me a little bit. Set me up with Jared Warren, told me that, you know, he was like a nobody, didn't have any real skills, nothing like that, weak chin, all that. So I was like, all right, cool. So I went in there, tried to finish him in the first, couldn't do it. Second, couldn't do it. Third, you know, I ended up finishing him with just overall volume. But I was actually kind of discouraged at that moment because I was just like, damn, like, I thought I was a somebody, you know, I'm struggling to beat this dude. And then we found out from his team that he was like an amateur world kickboxing champion. He had some skills, and you know, I was considering retirement after that. So I'm like, if the guys are this tough, and I'm like, shit, I might not belong in this scene. And then I found out he was actually like a top contender, undefeated freaking baller in the BKFC circuit and all that. So I was just like, all right, cool. You know, and the one against Lorenzo, the juggernaut hunt, that was, you know, my toughest fight that I've ever had in my life, and the first time I ever got put down. And you know, I got up, he put me down, got up, and that one kind of tested me, and it told me that my style just needed a lot more work. So instead of trying to be the bully and all the, you know, just trying to smash guys with pure power and aggression, I decided to change up my style. You know, I started studying some champions of the past and, you know, kind of blended a bunch of their skills together to kind of mold a style that I thought was pretty beneficial for my body structure. And, you know, I decided to test that out on Dakota Cochran and finished him in the first. And he's got 2 wins over previous world champions. And I was like, you know, so that shows that the style is effective. You know, then I went against Joe Diesel Riggs and, you know, they had the clash of heads, but I was hitting him probably 8-1 in that round. He dropped me with a nice left, very beautiful, but I gauged his timing from that, and that's when I was going in for that kill shot with the right, and yeah, I hit the bump ahead. So, you know, a lot's happened in the journey. You know, I've learned quite a bit about, you know, the skills and the styles and, like, the adaptations you have to make, and, you know, I always come in as the bigger guy. You know, like, I like to cut a lot of weight. I like to come in there, I like to have more strength, more reach, more everything. Like, I try to bully people with, like, overall size advantage, and I feel like that's kind of my niche. Once I get in there, you know, that pressure changes people.
Yeah, and you really touched on it there. Like, it seemed like the course correction was very evident. I mean, no shame, obviously, in losing to a guy like Lorenzo Hunt, who's a dual division champion and number 2 pound for pound, but it seemed like there was that demonstrably effective kind of turnaround in, you know, the Dakota Cochran fight. Can you speak to, you know, how satisfying that is, just kind of coming off of a loss? I mean, like we said, I mean, it's a loss to a guy who's obviously very talented and acclaimed for sure, but I mean, dispatching a guy like Dakota Cochran, who's like right up there, and, you know, and he's even been up there in like a couple weight categories. Like, what was it like garnering that first round finish against Cochran? I imagine that was a satisfying one.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. I was so scared for that fight because I developed this style by myself. You know, like, I didn't have a coach through this portion. I just watched a bunch of YouTube videos, and I just wrote down in my notebook a style that I thought would be capable of hanging with all these guys. And, you know, and I practiced that style every day for a year. And so I was just there to test it out. You know, I thought it was potentially going to be catastrophic, you know, because, like, I everything about fighting I changed, you know, and that's just not who I've never fought like this in my life. So I was very scared that I was going to realize once I got there that my style wasn't very good, because nobody else uses my style. And I'm like, you know, in the back of my head, I'm like, if, you know, if nobody else is doing it, maybe it's because it's not that good, you know? So I'm like, but to be able to finish him with that was very satisfying. And it told me that what I had been working on for the last year was effective. And I just wanted to, you know, kind of just keep working with it, add a few new weapons to it, make a few critiques, and make a title run. And, you know, that's kind of what's kind of turned out for me.
And your wording there was kind of interesting. So you were talking about how you were mostly honing the style by yourself, and kind of like your training was in like a myopic kind of sort of sense, like you're doing a lot of it yourself. Does that mean you've been regularly getting in work at certain spaces lately? Because I was seeing on some of that aggregators like Peak Performance Training Center and 605 Boxing and MMA were some of the listed affiliations. Is that kind of where you're at now, or who are you, I guess, working your game with? Yeah.
So most of the training I do alone. I do all my own stuff, and then I go in and I test it out at 605 and then 15th Round Boxing. Those are the two top gyms in our area for striking. So I'll usually go over there and, you know, either get my ass kicked and figure out a couple things need to change, or I'll, you know, do very well. And I'll be like, all right, so the things that I worked on this week were good. And I try to try new things out every single time I go, so that I can, you know, see what works good with the style, what doesn't, all that kind of stuff. But it's really good. They got a lot of good strikers over there. Yeah, the guys that I would describe as way better than me. You know, and I can't wait till they make the scene. You got Trayvon Kid Cobra Kroger. That kid is insane. You know, he's so quick, he's long, he's lengthy, he looks like Conor McGregor coming up. So yeah, I go over there and I work with him. He's he keeps me in shape over there. And then yeah, 15th Round got some real good guys over there. Got Coach George, and they pump out some really good fighters, and especially good southpaws. So that gives me a lot of training for these southpaw guys that seem to be dominating these striking sports lately. So it's nice to have that available.
Yeah, for sure, and great to hear you're getting in that work. I guess as you've been kind of talking about your bare-knuckle journey, it seems like there's been a sense of developing the fight IQ, and you're obviously putting in a lot of hard work, but there seems to be like a linear thread too. Of, I mean, obviously it's accompanying the fact that you're fighting such tough, notable kind of guys, but it seems like there is that certain sense going in where it's like, oh, damn, I'm kind of nervous. But like from an outsider perspective, it seems like you just thrive out there. Like I think I saw you in the Valor BK pit, you just had a certain look in your eye. I was like, damn, this guy's like made for bare knuckle. So, like, does something turn on? Like, is there a switch that almost flips when you're out there in the space competing relative to, like, the mindset kind of going in at certain points, I guess?
Yeah, definitely. So, I have a high level of anxiety, you know, so I have to put myself into, like, a really, really focused state of mind before I go out there. And the Valor fight especially was, like, that was my first pay-per-view. You know, I wasn't supposed to have a pay-per-view slot that night. They came up to us before the fight and they said, hey guys, they talked to everyone. And they're like, we have an extra pay-per-view slot for whoever gives us the most entertaining fight. And my game plan was actually not to do that initially. So whenever I heard that, I went to my corners and I was like, guys, we got to do a new game plan. They're going to give whoever puts on the most dominating baller performance, they're going to give that person a pay-per-view slot. And I'm like, this could be my break. Like, I've never had a break like this opportunity. I'm like, I'm just going to go out there and try to finish him the first and act like a psychopath. I'm like, I'm going to try to get this. And they were like, all right, dude, whatever, just make sure you win. And I went out there, broke my hand on the first punch, you know, to put him down, and he jumped back up, and I was like, shit, now I got to deal with a broken hand. And I was like, all right, well, I don't want him to know it's broken, so I better hit him with it again. So I smashed him again, he dropped, he got up, I smashed him again. I hit that dude with, like, four more solid right hands, and they all dropped him, and eventually he stayed down. And, you know, acted as crazy as I possibly could. They gave me the pay-per-view spot. That got me the Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship's attention, and I'm like, great, now I don't got to act like a fucking psycho anymore. Gain her attention. I'm just be a little bit more chill and focused on the striking and all that. But yeah, no. But if there's one video on the internet I can delete, it'd probably be that one.
But yeah, like, in talking about this fight, I mean, the backstory pretty interesting, just like in the sense it was kind of painted to you as like, oh, it's going to be kind of like an easy, like, soft touch sort of fight. And then you're fighting like a pretty acclaimed fighter. But I think it's interesting in a growth sense because for both of you, it was like your second bare knuckle fight, so it would seem like you guys have grown leaps and bounds since that fight you guys had circa almost like 3 years ago at this point. Like, are you guys almost different fighters at this point? So I was kind of talking to Jared the other day and was getting like his thoughts on the differences both you guys bring to the table as fighters. Like, do you see notable differences between what he brings to the table and also what you bring to the table?
Oh, tremendous differences. Yeah, so on Jared's end, He went from being a dude that could strike outside the pocket really well, but like seemed like he didn't like to be in too tight, to being a dude that just knows he's powerful and he just bangs and he trusts his chin. So he'll get in there and like he'll exchange with people and he hurts them. So I'm just like, yo, that's what's up. You know, that's my style also. I love to exchange with people, you know, and, you know, sometimes people, you know, they'll crack me really good and you see like this awesome look on their face, like they're like, fuck yeah, he's probably hurt. And then I just come and crack him with like six more, and it's like they almost hesitate after they hit you, you know. And I see that with a lot of Jared's opponents, you know, when he cracks them or like they crack him, they'll start like kind of feel like they, like, you know, you take like a little second, like they're like waiting to see if he's gonna drop or not, and then Jared just fucking rapes him with like six or, you know, it's crazy. So we have a lot of similarities in like our style now, and yeah, he's a great dude. I really like Jared Warren. Yeah, we've I would describe us as friends, and we've been chatting it up for years. You know, he's a really good dude, and I root for him every time that it's his turn to fight. And, you know, if he ends up taking the W in this one, then fuck it. You know, he deserves it. He earns it. He's a great dude, and I'll just have to come and get it next time for that trilogy.
Yeah, and I got that sense talking to Jared, too. Like, it just seemed like he very much respected your skills and just realized he was in for, you know, a good solid fight. But I guess I was kind of looking at it from this kind of perspective too, because we were talking about the Dakota Cochran fight before and how you kind of went into his backyard there and got a W over him, and this being like a home state title bid for Warren, like, does that embolden anything in you? Like, because I know some fighters, when they're like the quote-unquote away player, like maybe it adds a little something to what they're doing. Some guys it's kind of inconsequential. Like, what do you think about all that?
No, that's a really good question, man. I respond better to being in people's hometowns. I've been the hometown hero crusher my whole career. I love that part of it because it's no pressure on me. You know, when I roll in there, I'm expected to lose. You know, so I'm just like, oh, good. So anything that I do that's halfway decent is going to be proving these people wrong. So I'm like, that's kind of cool. And I love proving people wrong. And yeah, and I always perform worse at home, actually. So yeah, earlier in my career, I was like I was undefeated at 7-0, you know, and then I had my very first hometown match and got my ass kicked, you know, and then I went undefeated for like another 12 fights, and then we finally had another fight in my hometown and I got my ass kicked, and I'm like, shit, man, I'm like 17-2, and my only two losses are where everybody that I know can see me, but yet I keep leaving and winning, and then I come back and tell people I've been winning all these fights, so it's like, I look like a liar. These people are like, this guy's been telling us he's good for like,
oh, okay, there, you're back. You kind of popped out for, yeah, just a quick little second.
A call came through. Yeah, it's kind of messing us up a little bit.
Oh, yeah, no worries at all, man. But, no, I appreciate the insights into that, and I definitely understand that whole dynamic for sure. I mean, it definitely can be a certain level of stress or different mental consideration might be the way to say it versus, like, fighting at home as compared to, you know, kind of being the away guy and everything. So, yeah, definitely appreciate the insights there. I guess I'm kind of curious to get your thoughts on this too, because when I was talking to Jared Warren, it wasn't like he was like dismissive of this title fight necessarily, just with the interim tag being on it, but like, I mean, I feel like most fighters kind of share in the idea of like they would probably rather be the lineal kind of champion, and just with like Lorenzo Hunt seemingly seeking out like a heavyweight title shot, like, what are your thoughts on this being like an interim title situation, and do you have a certain thought for, you know, how the division could potentially, you know, shake out going forward with the belt, like maybe this becomes a lineal title eventually?
Yeah, you know, to me it's just a huge opportunity. You know, I look at it like this. I mean, the two baddest dudes in the division both left the weight division for a period of time, and I'm just like, either fighting either one of those dudes for a title is, dude, you're at best a 50-50 shot, bro. It's going to be potentially worse. So, and then I look at it like me and Jared, and I'm like, dude, we are a way more competitive fight, in my opinion, than, you know, these other guys. Those guys are scary motherfuckers, bro. I mean, Lorenzo Hunt, he put me in the ER so bad, dude. I was puking blood all night, freaking had concussion, freaking broken ass face, teeth. That was a rough night for me, dude. And, you know, granted, that's why I had to change my style, you know, and I think that my style would be a lot more competitive against him now, but it's still a rough ass night. I tell everybody that shit. I'm like, dude, even if you beat his ass, you're probably going to spend some time in the clinic, man. Because he hits hard as shit, and he does hit. You know, you're going to have to take that shot. So to see this opportunity, I'm not going to dismiss it. I'm like, if I get a championship belt, I'm like, cool, dude, that's awesome. Like, it's a golden opportunity. Let's take it. And then, you know, we'll handle the rest of the business as it comes later.
Yeah, for sure. It just seems like such an interesting, you know, look for the division right now. Like, overall, it's great. But, like, especially with, like, some of the ranked guys. Like, I know some of the guys are kind of, like, outside of the, you know, category now a little bit, like Mike Richmond and Dave Mundell, but they're fringe, like, involved in the light heavyweight picture, and you got guys like Danny Christie and Isaac Doolittle. Like, I know you've talked before about maybe getting a Doolittle fight going on, like, a, you know, previous juncture, so it seems like a healthy kind of division. I imagine that would be fun or stimulating at the very least for, you know, someone readying to settle into, like, a possible, you know, champion kind of position there.
Absolutely. Yeah, Doolittle's a baller too. That guy, he's a lot better than he tries to let on. I think he's fooled a lot of people, and I like that. So I'm not going to try to give away all his secrets, but yeah, I think he's going to mess with people up.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. Anytime I talk to him, like, I get what you mean. Like, his attitude almost belies the fact that he's such, like, a badass kind of fighter. But it's kind of fun. I'm kind of getting that vibe from you a little bit too, though, admittedly.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but just noticing, like, I mean, you were kind of touching on the MMA run a bit earlier, just having 20 MMA fights across amateur and pro, and, like, there's obviously big differences in readying to come to bare knuckle, just, like, subverting the, you know, grappling and a lot of the leg kicks and things of that nature, but, like, what are some aspects you brought to your bare knuckle preparations that are different from what you did in your previous sport? Because it seemed like how you were talking about your growth in bare knuckle before, it was like very studious and diligent. So I guess, are there any different aspects you've added to this new combat sport?
Oh, 100%. So I've always been a very good striker, and I start off as a wrestler though. So I basically just ground and pounded everybody until, you know, people just, you know, realized they didn't want to go to the ground with me. So then I had to get really good at striking. Well, once I got decent at striking, they all wanted to go back to the ground with me. And eventually I was, you know, fighting wrestlers that were way stronger than me. So I was just like, getting out wrestled all the time, you know, so it's really difficult for people to see just how good I was at striking, because it was always basically just a wrestling match in the Midwest out here. You know, these are freaking amazing wrestlers out here. So anytime they sense the threat of a striker, they'll just take your ass down. And, but anyways, in bare knuckle, I'm a force to be reckoned with my striking. I've got a granite chin. I very rarely get rocked. I hit really, 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 really hard. So I can be a lot more aggressive in this sport because I know the payout's bigger for me. You know, I've added so much more muscle to my frame because of the 2 minute rounds. You know, my style is very, very, very good in a 2 minute round, which is all out. You know, like I just go out to crush somebody and I recover very quickly with those 1 minute breaks. So I figured, you know, you got these guys building all this cardio like they used to for like boxing and MMA, but we're not in that anymore. You got to understand, you know, this is more of a sprint, not a marathon. You know, you want to show up with a freaking sprint car, not a freaking, you know, a Tesla trying to get you 100,000 miles to the gallon so you never get tired. You got to pump out more damage in a shorter amount of time. And that's how you win the judges on the scorecard and increase your chance of hurting somebody. So you got to pump out more punches per second, per minute, and they got to hurt and do more damage. And so I bring a stronger frame into this, knowing that I only have to go for 2 minutes, you know, and so I don't need all that extra cardio, so I can pack on more muscle to do more damage. And that's, you know, I've taken on the best strength conditioning program in the world right now for combat sports. You know, and I've been trying to keep that a secret for a long time, but I've been letting people know it's Fielder's heavy hitter program, and it's designed for like MMA and striking and stuff. So when I come in, I start hitting people. Like, I am primed for this sport. I'm primed for that moment. You know, and it's a lot of people to deal with.
Yeah, and I would think that the MMA experience would help with like the familiarity with the clinch positions and stuff like that, because I've heard different bare knuckle fighters who will face guys who are like purely gloved boxers, and they almost kind of freeze up when they're in the clinch positions, or there's that lack of fluidity that maybe like an MMA guy would have. Have you noticed that as well, like paying dividends in the BKFC, like active clinch positions? And
yeah, that active clinch allows me to use my wrestling background. You know, I've got over 250 wrestling matches, you know, which they're just wrestling, you know, there's no striking, but at the same time, it's still a match, you know, where you're going against another man. And with every ounce of your power, and you're trying to break his willpower, he's trying to break yours, and you get really, really mentally strong doing 200 wrestling matches. So, cause in a way, it's like 200 fights that you had to win, you know, or lose, or whatever, to end critique. And I bring all that mental strength and clinch work into the bare knuckle, and in my speed, dude. Like, when I get behind people, you know, people don't understand, like, if I get behind you and I throw punches around your body and I'm wrecking you the side of the face and you physically can't hit me because you're facing the wrong way, I'm almost untouchable, you know? So like, I've been working on my footwork so much that it's very hard for people to stop me from getting to a position to where I can hit them at will and they can barely hit me, you know? So it's hard to explain it, but it's a very, very, you know, very good style. So I'm really excited to show that to you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think you explained it well, and I think it's a cool confluence of like being defensively responsible but offensively effective, and that offensive effectiveness very much coming through in that fact you've got the 100% finishing rate across your bare knuckle wins. And I mean, Warren, no slouch in that regard too, like an 80% finishing rate in 3 of his 4 stoppages in the first round. Like, I mean, is it pretty safe to say this one's not going to go the distance? Do you have a certain idea of how this bout is going to, you know, play out? Do you have a certain visualization of that? Or
I guarantee you it won't go the distance. Yeah, that's a bet that I would take. Yeah, no, this fight won't go the distance. And I guarantee that because I set a pace that it can't, you know, like it can't happen. I eliminate the distance as being an option because either I'm going to exhaust myself and get finished, or I'm going to finish you because I'm putting more of a pace than what you are because you're trying to stretch it out. So one of us is going to get finished. You know, that's the guarantee that I have when people watch me. I don't do decision wins. You know, I won't. I refuse it. I don't. Yeah, it's going to be a finish 100%. You know. And I do foresee it going my way. I think Jared is a really good fighter, but I'm way more creative. You know, so it's really good. He's the better technical fighter. I think he's got a cleaner one-punch knockout power, but I think I'm a little bit too creative for him. So I think he's going to get caught.
Well, it was definitely a fight I was excited for before talking to you, but you're definitely getting me more excited. You're amping it up a little more for sure, but noticing the time's getting away from me a little bit. Like I said, I want to be mindful of your schedule and everything, Josh. So is there like a final parting thought you might want to add as we're kind of wrapping things up here, man?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you again to my team. You know, like, I got a really great team to help me get here. You know, I got Austin Freeboy-Peterson. You know, he's the best physical trainer in Sioux Falls. He's been helping me build a warship for my fights, dude. Like, when I show up, like, I have a warship built. You know, like, I'm prepared to go to war, and I will. And I want to thank Larry Ferguson, my strategist. I want to thank Smith Brothers Combat for, you know, being a really great management team and securing the fight for me. And yeah, have a great weekend. Have a happy 4th of July. Don't miss July 14th. It's going to be an absolute war. Mike Richmond's fight alone will be worth the $7 they charge on the Bare Knuckle app pay-per-view. So yeah, you definitely don't want to miss him. So tune in, watch it. It's going to be good. Take a piss. Get your popcorn ready. You know, make sure you guys are there because you're not going to want to miss this one.
Yeah, going to be some fireworks on that 4th of July stretch, but it seems like they're saving a few fireworks for July 14th as well with this rematch with Jared Warren. And like I said, very much looking forward to BKFC 47 and this interim light heavyweight title fight, and appreciate you coming on, man. But until all that goes down, you have a good rest of your day, man. Thank you for the time.
Absolutely. Hey, brother, have a good rest of your night. Thank you.